Hey friends, my name is Chidima, also known as the Type A Hippie, and this is the Type A Hippie podcast, Chicast episode 12. And so I am on the line with Rachel Burtner, and I'll tell you a funny story of how I stumbled into Rachel's life and her into mine, because I was listening to the first podcast I ever listened to was Serial, and that showed, so season one was all about the United States versus Adnan Syed. And then I also listened to season two. And then I started listening to Undisclosed, which was kind of like a follow-up to Serial podcast. And it has three attorneys. They provide legal commentary and analysis for Adnan Syed's case. And one of the episodes, so I'm really behind, but one of the episodes highlighted a nonprofit organization called Healing Broken Circles. And I was like, I need to speak with someone from this organization because it's pretty amazing. And I just had to talk to someone. And so I started doing some research. And what I found was this young woman named Rachel Burtner. And she is a yogi like myself. And then as we emailed back and forth, we discovered that we have a lot of similarities. Like, she teaches trauma-sensitive yoga, and so do I, amongst other things, because I always say we're all in recovery from something. And so when I emailed her, she did agree to be on this podcast. So, Rachel, welcome to the Type A Hippie podcast. I'm really glad that you said yes.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you went looking around for information on all of this. It's nice that people are interested.
Definitely. So tell us a little bit about kind of how you ended up being a part of Healing Broken Circles and maybe some of your own journey and a little bit more about yoga and trauma-sensitive yoga and recovery.
Yeah, absolutely. Without being too, it's like everything, a long story of winding up. As a woman working with men in incarceration was not at all where I thought I was going to be winding up. I really actually came to yoga. I came to yoga to look for my own healing. And when the West gave up on me, of anorexia had been my main diagnosis for about 20 years of my life, my most memorable life. I had been treated in the Western system. And I just kept having this issue where I was wanting people to ask me why I wasn't eating. And I wanted to understand how I kept winding up in abusive relationships. And I wanted to understand not how to stay sober as much as how to not be around people that would take advantage of me being in an altered state and rape me. Sure. And then why were they people that I knew? And why did everybody want me to be mad at my friends? And this whole just mess of yoga was the first place that I could stop, breathe, and try to start to think about how did my life get here?
Sure.
And here, when I started all this, was with another prognosis, no insurance, a man who had abused me and left me for another woman again, and being just very confused about how to even live with myself, that these were the decisions I had made, but also that I had a lot of love for people that I didn't understand what had happened to them either. So I started on my journey, started with myself, and I started having healing that I had been told was impossible with first my body and then rejecting all medication, and my mind was healing and clearing up, and I started really working, and doing recovery work, and I'm teaching yoga to people with eating disorders, and I'm coaching, and I'm working with having people find connections with their bodies, and I'm working at OSU working with women that have been abused or had crisis sexually and getting them reintegrated back into their bodies. So really just celebrating with women that whatever has happened to you, I don't care. I want you to love your body and I want you to feel empowered.
That's right.
And then there became this feeling though that I still couldn't shake and get rid of that I had been trying to explain for years. And it kind of felt like if you would try to explain to somebody having to sneeze, but they didn't know the feeling, and it's super agitating, right?
Sure.
So, right. Because I also kept trying to figure out when I was abused, where did I go in that moment? I understood what had happened to my body, and I understood what people could tell me, conditioning, blah, blah, blah. But there was a part of me that had never really been restored, even when my weight would get restored, my vitals, I could hit these states of recovery. So I started wanting to know about the other side. This is yoga, right? So we're going to look at the dark and the light.
Sure.
If we're going to look at my, if I get to be a victim, let's look at who victimized me. And I also wanted to understand why everybody wanted me to be very angry. My abuse started early in my life. As a kid, you don't know that someone that you love is not supposed to touch you inappropriately. You still love them. All of a sudden, people just say they can't touch you anymore. And it's like you did something wrong. It was like I did something wrong.
That's right. Yeah.
So as an adult woman then, of kind of going, well, uh-oh, what happened to some of these guys? That led me to, I'd been doing a lot of trauma work. And one of my friends who I met at a training who does, he is one of the heads of Healing Broken Circles. Adam Wetterhahn is amazing, and he teaches at Marion Correctional. He invited me to come talk to some of these men that had been coming out of prison. And I met, and they're reintegrating into society. And it wasn't even in my mind what was going to happen, that I ended up meeting one of these men who had been incarcerated for 27 years. And he had developed an emotional intelligence training in prison. To teach to people, right? He's phenomenal to teach inmates and men how to have emotion so that they wouldn't wind up back in this situation. He and I started talking one day about his charge, and it was rape of a minor. Wow. And so I asked him if we could, talk one day. And we ended up actually then going and walking around a park for a few hours in Columbus, Ohio. And he very candidly let me ask anything. And I very candidly did. And we talked about what we had in common. And we had both been abused as kids. And no one ever did anything. And we both had started to have really deviant behavior. And people started treating the deviant behavior. But no one wanted to be responsible for why we were deviating. And that then snowballs into, as anyone who's had any kind of addictive history knows, there's a point that you, whoever I am, is not... I'm there somewhere, but I have no idea how to even access that voice. And he and I were able to start to talk about rape very, very candidly of where did he go in that moment? And did he know it was wrong and about losing control? And did he consider what was happening to the other person? Because right. If he's feeling powerful, what's he taking from her?
Sure.
And yeah, and these are kind of the dialogues that I've been able to open up with some of these men. And it's amazing that no, they don't think about that, because why would they in that moment? They're gone too. But he was able to do for me something that no one was able to do, which was he never was able to apologize to his victim, because we don't believe in full circle healing in our rehabilitation. We don't do it. And he really wanted to apologize, but it never really manifested. She wanted an apology. He wanted to apologize. People, they just didn't put it together. He gets released. Let's just forget about it. And I asked him if he would apologize to me, because nobody ever apologized to me for raping me, for abusing me, never. And he wanted to do that. And so that sneeze feeling, this feeling in my body that I never was able to explain to people, that I kind of gave up on, and even yoga, it would remind me that it was there, but I just was learning to accept it and live with it. And he is the first man that actually ever looked me in the eye and in an open body language and let it be completely about me. And he apologized. And it was genuine. And that, yeah.
So how did that
feeling?
Yeah, tell me about the feeling.
That feeling went away in that moment. But the weird thing about it that I didn't anticipate was, I did feel better, but I had come to a lot of conclusions in my own healing, and I was pretty good with where I was. I was not anticipating how much healing I still wanted for the men in my life that I had. I don't forgive what happened, but I forgive how it got there. And it also just showed me that there is not a lot of, no one ever is letting these people be sorry. And with the work that I do with trauma, is that shame and guilt will ruin your life if nobody helps you. And no one, yoga was the first place where I was given permission to stop feeling so ashamed and guilty by considering it wasn't my fault. But there's a huge power when somebody actually says to you, this was not your fault, and it was my fault. So whatever energy these people put in me, that man actually was willing to take back, which to me was huge and powerful.
That is powerful. I started volunteering at Safe House Center, which is here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we provide resources, free resources and support for survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. And one of the things that we talk about, you know, is that there's never a good reason. It doesn't matter if a woman is, you know, is under the influence, inebriated, mm-hmm. not wearing anything, mm-hmm. wearing a lot, mm-hmm. you know, none of that stuff, because if it's not a clear yes in terms of consent, then it's rape, right? And there are laws that protect children that aren't able to, you know, not every child's able to give consent from a legal perspective. And so when these things happen, you know, one of the things that I wanted to do on this particular podcast, not so much, not specifically this episode, but we're doing it on this episode, but in general, across all episodes, is to shift the conversation, right? So that we start to ask different questions and learn kind of more of the appropriate questions so that we drop from our vocabulary and our consciousness the inappropriate ones, like, what were you wearing, you know, or what did you say? What did you do to him? Well, what did, you know, all of this stuff, because it shifts to your point, like it starts to be victim blaming and shaming. Yeah. Yep. And there is, I haven't found in my 38 years of being on this planet, I have yet to find why or what shame does that's beneficial. I don't think it does. That particular emotion is not one of the healthier ones, because what it does is it serves to silence and it serves to isolate. And so what I've said over and over again on this podcast is there's something incredibly powerful when I say to another, me too, because I was also a victim of sexual abuse as a child, probably 30 years mm-hmm. ago, from a family, and I put this in air quotes, friend. And, you know, there is something that is stolen from a child and from a woman that is sexually assaulted, that I believe in redemption. I believe in spirit, the divine, whatever you want to call that power that's greater than yourself. And I do believe in healing. And at the same time, there is something that was forever altered because of that experience in my life. Can a negative experience be redeemed and used for good so that I can be helpful to other people? Absolutely. It's happening in my life. It sounds like it's happening in your life. And at the same time, our lives changed forever in a different direction because of our experiences with sexual abuse and sexual assault. You know,
and I believe in energy.
Absolutely.
And I also believe in my right as a woman to also be connected to someone that I love energetically, and for me to have empathy, as in if they come into a room and they are having a bad day, I'm probably going to feel that just from their vibration of how they're feeling. And so that was more of my curiosity that I started, because I've been able to go in and I've sat down and talked to men that have been practicing yoga, that have studied it. They're in higher consciousness of discussing, where did you go when you murdered someone? Where did you go when you abused someone? How are you feeling? Where were you in your body? Do you remember, like, what led up to those things? And it's phenomenal to actually then talk to, in those moments, if somebody can just be in a room and I can feel their energy, what is happening with someone who has never been conditioned to deal with emotions, that if their rage and their anger and their hurt and their shame is literally penetrating my body. Sure. And what then is my responsibility if somebody puts an energy inside of me that I'm now connected to that I don't understand? And why won't anybody explain it to me or let me talk to someone that has maybe had an experience with that energy to give me some understanding of what I'm up against?
Right.
Because maybe it actually isn't. Sometimes people do have to hear, and with a lot of these men, what I have found across the board is that they had horrible traumas in their childhood. It does not excuse what happened later, but no one has ever acknowledged that they were victims first.
Right.
And I'm not, again, excusing then what that grows into, but it's just energetically, where are we failing, even just with children, of not noticing that something has changed? We should be able to feel it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I think to your point, a lot of times we shut that off, right? We shut that off for any number of reasons. Sometimes it's extremely uncomfortable. It's too much. And so I feel like in our society today, more than I've ever felt it, as much as I feel deep, genuine connections with people, like when you and I were emailing back and forth and you shared some of your story, I felt incredibly connected to you. And I said, we have more in common than what meets the eye, perhaps, right? And at the same time, I do feel like we get more shut doors in our faces and we get more of like, just mind your business, focus on what's going on with you. And there's this almost weirdly obsession with self, but not in a positive, like seeking solitude, but more in an isolation or putting ourselves out there, but not in a genuine kind of way. It's more of like self-promotion more than this is what I've been through. How can I be helpful to other people? And we don't always look at the entire picture because you're right. I mean, one of the things that made me break down in that particular podcast and some subsequent ones that dealt specifically with healing broken circles was, and I don't know if you listened to that particular one, the men that were on that episode sounded like people that I went to college with, sounded like people that I've met in coffee shops, you know, across this world. And they didn't seem like, in quotes, what someone might believe an incarcerated individual sounds like. And I broke down because I've started saying this a lot, and I say it probably every episode, and I say it on social media, I say it in person, because it's drilling down more to my core, and there's something to it. You know, I am you, and you are me. There are no others, and there's no us versus them. Because when I start to hear more of your story, Rachel, and you hear more of mine, if I'm able to say me too, which is incredibly powerful and incredibly healing in and of itself, then you on the other end realize, okay, I'm not the only one. If you mistakenly thought that you were the only one that had experienced this, now you know, because I've shared with you, I've been transparent and honest and authentic with you, that I've been there too. And maybe every single piece of our story is not exactly alike, and it doesn't need to be. However, some of the bigger themes are similar. And so then, where you were once by yourself, perhaps experiencing that shame and guilt, now I'm with you and you're with me, and then we can, you know, together be connected with, and I think we attract people into our lives for various reasons, then we start to build a healthier community, you know, where we're having conversations that are sometimes uncomfortable and difficult, but we're talking about the important things. Because to your point, anyone that's committed a crime is still a human being. I may not condone what has been done to the victim, to society at large. And at the same time, I do have a measure of compassion in my heart to say, okay, there has to be more. You know, it's not that cut and dry. It's not that black and white.
Well, and I say to people often that I also was being treated for way too long in my life as a repeat violent offender as well, except I was repeating violence against myself, which made me also then not just the victim, but I was also my own aggressor. And I genuinely was sitting in this, what am I doing? What is wrong with me? And taking responsibility for the fact that we weren't addressing source, but we were now addressing the way that I was choosing to handle, because I didn't have the Me Too and I didn't have somebody to say, I really shouldn't have done that. I'm sorry. This wasn't about you. There was nothing you could have done in that situation. I lost control, and that was not your fault. And I needed to hear that. And it's been amazing that with some of these men, that I, and they've shared with me, I've been in and talking with some of these men that will share with me that I am the first woman that has treated them as a human, that has talked to them. I am in there talking to my best friends. I am in there talking to my ex-boyfriends. I am in there talking to the men that abused me in my life. And what it also heals for me is just this feeling of, well, are they ever going to be someone that can have healing and help? I would forgive someone if they were sorry because I loved them first. And there's not room for that as well when I'm being asked to love my own abuser, my main abuser, which was me, and I had to work on self-love for someone I could not tolerate. Is it possible that before there's the yoga, the space in between the breath of where did my boyfriend become an addict who becomes my rapist? And where did my best friend lose control and become my abuser? But what was first? And that it was the important part for me to be able to see in duality of, this is a human being that lost control. And I know for a fact that that happens because that's been my experience. So I never wanted to be someone who said, this is who you permanently have to be now for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
That's not where I started.
Yeah, definitely. And what one thing that is interesting in what you're saying is, you know, this idea, a lot of times people tell others how they're supposed to think and how they're supposed to feel and what experiences they're supposed to have, you know, and I like to say that when I'm doing that or when I'm getting in the way of the divine and not being used as a vessel, mm-hmm. but instead kind of getting in the way and trying to be the God it's, you know, itself, is that I'm not giving someone the dignity of having their own experience. You know, because I'm actually blocking the process as much as I might think that I may be helpful. And my ego tends to, not all the time, but it has, you know, hijacked me being used by a power that's greater than myself. And so when I move out of the way, I'm able to be present solely and be there for someone, whether it's saying me too or experiencing whatever it is, like the process that someone else is, or living alongside them. But to say to someone that has been victimized in that way that they're able to have their own experience, whatever that means or looks like to them, and then you proceeding to model that is incredibly powerful.
Absolutely. It creates... What's interesting is it also creates a dynamic that we really don't see. And that's the beautiful thing about how much there is this change coming where with I teach yoga as a recovery model, but it also means that we have to embody the entire practice, which also recognizes that I'm going to change. And as I change in my life, what I have believed to be true is going to also change. And then once my truth changes, I'm going to look at not just every day forward differently, but I'm going to apply that truth to what my life has been up until that point. So for a while, it was true that I was not able to even be around someone who I couldn't tolerate even hearing that a man had abused another woman because I hadn't dealt with that myself.
Absolutely.
So, right. And so there's also stages to all of this. Like the immediate jump isn't, okay, this happened. I should be expressing forgiveness. I should care about their story. I get to have my own experience, like you're saying, as it's organic to me. But if my goal is that I want to reclaim wholeness before this happened to me, before these things happened, that I want to go back to then being able to walk around the world feeling safe and feeling inspired and seeing good in people.
Yes.
And that I should be allowed and encouraged and supported to be someone that isn't going to be defined by negativity.
Yeah.
Because that won't change the world for us. And we have learned that that does not work.
Okay.
So it also, right.
I'm like, I look like a bobblehead probably over here. I'm like shaking my head like, yes, I'm with you, girl.
Right. And it's one of those things where it gets hard when people go, you can't tell me that you honestly believe in all of this. And it's, of course, I believe that love is something that should be an answer that is given, that we are able to see in everyone is somebody's child. It's amazing to me to actually, sometimes I feel guilty that I get to be in the presence of some of these men that all I can think about is how many people miss them and might not actually, they never get to really see them. They don't get to sit face to face, and they really miss these human beings in their life. And they're also out there in the world having to listen and hear the way that we judge people that they love.
That's true. Yeah.
And they shouldn't have to be ashamed of that.
Yeah. No, I was right. having a, I call it, what do I call it? Like a, it wasn't a heated discussion. Everyone was passionate on this Facebook thread, and it was shortly after the election. And so I think regardless of who you voted for or for whom you voted, it was kind of hectic, you know, and I don't see it dying down anytime soon. And someone had posted something that I found to be offensive, and I, at that point, didn't feel called to walk away. You know, I felt like this is an opportunity to have a conversation and we can plant a seed, you know, and I did. And so it did get heated. And what's interesting is I was able to chat with the person who initiated the post offline. So we were texting back and forth. And what she said to me was like, I really appreciate you not calling me names. A lot of people who don't agree with my stance have said that I'm stupid, I'm ignorant, I'm uninformed, blah, blah, blah. And I talked about this in a podcast, and I just had tears in my eyes when I did, because I don't think that's productive. You know, like, name calling has never been like, oh, okay. What, if someone calls me a name, I'm like, oh, you know what? Matter of fact, you're absolutely right. Like, that's never happened, you know? And when I talked to her, I said, I do believe that these conversations, no matter how difficult, if we're able to get to the other side of them, and if we come to the table with compassion and love and tolerance and patience, I do think that things can shift. So to your point, and she was like, well, I don't agree with that. And I was like, well, that's okay. I totally agree with it. You know, I'm okay with that, because I've oftentimes said to people, well, yeah, no, I don't agree with that at all. And I say it usually just like that, usually with a smile, and I'm not angry. We're not in an argument. I got to keep it real, you know? And what's true to me is that love. Like, I would say if I had to address, like, believe in a religion, it would be love. And I do have a faith perspective with which I was raised, and I value it very much. And really the bottom line is love. And I don't see any other way. That's the thing. Like, I don't see any other way to mend and heal and grow and not only survive but to thrive if I can't fall back on that, you know? Because it's going to look bleak. Like, the world is going to be super bleak if I think only negative, and that's what I'll also attract into my life, people that also think very negatively, and it's not a us versus them thing either. It's just a what do I feel is what do I want to, like, manifest and attract into my life and into my world, you know? So I'm with you. I totally believe in that.
That's, I also just feel, I have to keep it honest with myself. It's beautiful to me and heartbreaking to go back into my childhood of that. When I was a kid, the main thing that I wanted was, I started the secret club, you know, that none of the adults could know about. And what I was doing, it kind of almost sounds like I was starting a cult, that I had little girls, like, chanting, basically, you know, when we grow up, we will believe kids when they tell the truth. When we grow up, we will tell on adults that hurt kids. And the worst and best one was, when we grow up, when a kid is scared, we will give them a hug until they are not scared.
Totally.
And yeah. And the big thing for me, and that's stuck with me, of be the adult you needed, but not an adult from an adult's point of view that's been in the world and has been like, this is bad and this is ugly and there's bills and I'm busy, but a kid that genuinely was just terrified and all I wanted was somebody to give me a hug and say I'm sorry and make me feel safe again.
Absolutely.
So my thing is, I'm just, the responsibility that we could be having with each other is also, where have we made each other so afraid of other people's opinions, of other people's words, and of other people's rejection? Because that's learned.
Yes.
That's not how kids show up in the world.
Yes. Agreed. Agreed wholeheartedly. I remember I was in New York, I think, last winter. So maybe it was November. And I remember what was happening in Syria. And I just saw people like walking. And it was so devastating to my heart, because I was thinking, these are human beings, you know, and they were misplaced and they were displaced. And, you know, I just talked about, I was talking to, about kind of fitting in on my last podcast episode. And one of my friends said, that is, you know, we were talking about fitting physically, because we were talking about the struggles of Kate on This Is Us. Do you watch that show?
No.
Okay. It's a really well-written, really solid program. And so she is, I would say, from a clinical perspective, she's morbidly obese. And so that's a struggle that is highlighted on the show. And so many people are so for her, because so many of us, especially people who have survived sexual assault or sexual abuse, I would say kind of run in one direction or the other in terms of food and their relationship with food and their relationship with their own body, right? You know, and food is one of those things, like alcohol, if you abstain from alcohol and drugs, like, okay, you don't, I mean, yes, your body's...
Food is a drug. Yeah, yes. That's another podcast.
Yeah,
food
totally. And so, you know, your body, your brain is hijacked if you're addicted, if you have substance use disorder. It needs a rewiring where you don't physically need the booze and the drugs, although you might feel like it and you might be sick like it. But food, we actually, like, there is nowhere I can go, you know, walking down the street or driving in my car where there is not an opportunity for me to indulge in food. And so my story is that it was the opposite. Like, I restricted, you know, I lost a ton of weight, and I know that it was the perfect storm. Like, I was sexually abused. I was bullied in seventh grade significantly. And the one thing that I could control, because I didn't feel, I didn't want to bother my parents. I was one of five and they had a lot on their plates. And not to say that they would not have been a safe place. They absolutely would have been a safe place. However, I felt like I don't want to add more. And I think that's part of the secrecy and the shame and the isolation. When perpetrators do that, I do believe that there's some selection in that process. Some of it is opportunity, and some of it is like, well, who's not going to say anything, you know? And I remember crying myself to sleep, and what I could control in my life was whether or not I put something in my mouth, whether or not I ate something. And so I just didn't eat. You know, I would eat one meal a day for all of seventh grade. And that was what kickstarted a 20-year eating disorder, where that was what I could control, you know. And even in the midst of health and other areas of my life, I mean, it went from restricting to exercise bulimia to, you know, continuing to restrict, only drinking coffee, only eating low-fat, fat-free foods, and two separate roommates when I lived in Vegas saying, I think you have a problem, you know? And I was like, I don't think so, you know? Like, and here's the thing, right? It's like, and you should probably mind your business is what I was thinking, because I got very defensive. And that's where I think, to your point, one of the things that we get to is like, this is what I'm doing over here. Don't worry about what I'm doing over here. Mind your business, because it doesn't concern you. When really, we're all really connected and we're all related. And so it does. Like, what you're doing and you not being healthy in all areas or most areas of your life does have an impact. Even if it may not be a direct impact, there is implication there, you know, because we are connected, because I'm you and you are me, you know, so.
Absolutely. That's the biggest thing for, and you're then nail on the head that we, I had a longstanding eating disorder as well, and I'm having heart failure, and I'm giving prognoses, and I'm winding up over and over and over in this, you know, the Western institution that is very, very big on then controlling, again, my weight and controlling what goes in my mouth and controlling at what time of day am I eating. And we're still not addressing the thing when I start working with people, I do not judge them. And I tell them every single day, if they still are on the fence of if they want to be here today, that's okay. But I'm glad you're here. Thank you for staying.
Totally.
And I understand why you don't want to be here, but I'm not going to tell you that you should want to be alive. We're just going to exist in the fact that today it's very devastating to still be alive. That's okay. But we have to start addressing. And I think as women, we're standing up a lot of saying, this took over my life, but yeah. Why did I go to this length in the first place to give up 20 years of my body, my mind, my spirit, my future? And I do not want another little girl, another little boy to have to feel that alone.
Yeah.
It was not necessary. If somebody would have really just said, I love you, I'm not mad. What's going on? That would have been a completely different experience, but no one said that.
Yeah.
Because they were going to be responsible for what I said.
Yep.
That was the other problem, is that what adult then is going to stand up to the other adults that also probably need some healing. So yeah. That I'm with you, girl. It's a mess that we all can see, though, that the solution is so simple.
Yeah.
And it's kind of that thing of if you asked everybody in the world to jump at the same time, would they do it?
Yeah.
And it's just, why, right? Like, why can't we all, why? And there's the honest question. What are we losing by refusing to just close our eyes and actually know that if we are just breathing, that all you know is that another human being is present with you? What the heck does the rest of this matter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. And so, as we wrap up, because Rachel is in the midst of a busy day, and I know I am over here too, it's, you know, I mean, this is a larger discussion, and I'm sure we'll connect again and have another episode together. That's my hope, and maybe even in person, because we are technically neighbors. Although I'm on the right side of things, friends, because I'm a Wolverine and she seems to be on the not so right side of things because she's talking about OSU, which is like a naughty word over here in Ann Arbor. But it's all
we'll heal that broken
soul. Right. That's right.
We'll heal that
frontier,
girl.
more will be revealed, and like there's always we're all in recovery from something, right? Like
amen.
We all have something going on. So I am so glad that we at least started the conversation and love what you're doing. So everything that we talked about, healing broken circles, I'll include the link to that. And I'll include, Rachel, do you feel comfortable if people reach out to you? Do you have a website that people can?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's under construction. We'll be back up soon. It's recoveringyoga.com, and we are actually, I'll be giving a TED talk the 29th this month from Marion Correctional. Healing Broken Circles is putting that on. So a lot of this will be touched on with some other really important stories, and some really great men are going to be talking as well.
That's so exciting. I'm waitlisted for it. So we'll see if I get in. I'll be so excited if I can come get in, and maybe we can do a follow-up next week then. We'll see.
Amazing.
Fingers crossed. But yeah, one of
come
the things
on,
that,
first.
Right, totally, make it happen. One of the things that I thought was so astounding was that TED Talks get beamed into Marion Rehabilitation and Correctional Facility in Ohio, and they're truly, the warden is truly progressive there. And
yes.
The thing is, and this was a question that I posed, a drop that I was like, I know that people aren't going to be happy with it, and I don't really care. This is the sweet and spicy type A hippie. So if people really believe that they're pro-life, wouldn't we want people that are willing to be rehabilitated and treated so that they can move forward in their lives, wouldn't we want to put money and resources and support behind that? Just a thought, friends. It's a rhetorical question. Talk amongst yourselves, because Rachel seems to think that, and I do too, and that's why we're talking about this, and we're not just talking about it. We're willing to do something about it. So with that, I am going to read a couple stories, and this little boy is so cute. So, of course, friends, you know that I'm reading from Humans of New York, the stories, the table book. It's available for sale at all major retailers and online retailers. So there's a little boy with glasses, and he's wearing a uniform, and he says, "I want to be a lawyer, but just a defense lawyer, because I'm much better at defending people than I am at accusing people. But I'd only want to defend kind people. You can tell if someone is kind by their aura. Plus, I'm smart. I know so many math facts. Ask me any math fact. Try multiplication. Here's a hard one. What's 5 times 16? That is well within my skills. 80. Do you want a strategy for multiplying double-digit numbers? If you want, I can teach you a strategy for multiplying double-digit numbers." Then he goes on and he says, "I have very little friends. I had one, but he went to the next grade. To make a friend, you have to talk to them, which can be very hard. Most of the time when I try to talk to them, I fail. Everyone thinks I'm a geek." And then it looks like he might be with his mom. And it says, "Lewis is different. He's got two moms. He's an old soul." So this is one of his moms. "We live in the projects, and he doesn't know who Michael Jordan is or anything about rap music. He dresses himself in the morning. He chooses a button down and slacks and sits in the kitchen with his legs crossed and reads the newspaper. But he's still got the heart of a child. Yesterday he had $5 to buy himself a Halloween costume, and he saw a boy he knew while he was walking to the store, and he chose to buy him a costume instead. I always tell him, 'You're different, Lewis, and that's okay.' When he wants to play, I walk him all the way down to Central Park because I really don't want him to change." So thanks, Rachel, for joining us on this episode of the Type A Hippie podcast. I'm so glad that we got a chance to talk. "I honor the place within you where the entire universe resides. I honor the place within you of love, of light, of truth, of peace. I honor the place within you where when you are in that place in you and I am in that place in me, there is only one of us." So friends, remain blessed. Have a wonderful day. My name is Shadima, also known as the Type A Hippie. Namaste.